time. So today, oh, I forgot my name. We'll have to put that up later. Yeah. Thank you. That's it. Before we talk about this morning, let's talk about this week. So this week, well, let's go back to last year. Last year, I coached softball for the first time. That was an experience. It's kind of like baseball. I know a lot about baseball, but it's different. Same but different. Coach Clementine's team, the fields are smaller, the base paths are smaller, the ball is larger than in baseball, and probably the most obvious difference is how you pitch, right? You pitch overhand versus underhand. So this year, Clementine moves up to the next age group, and we had our first practice this week, and I did what all coaches do when you start out, right? I got to see who I got on this team. I got Clementine. I know a little bit about her. Her friend Annie, her dad's helping me coach. We got 10 other players that I don't know anything about. And so we get there, and their ages are we have 10 to 12. So we have one fourth grader on our team, one seventh grader on our team, and then everybody else is between. So you can imagine, we have little tiny kids and then giants. Like, I got to the first practice, I'm like, these girls are huge. So, but that doesn't mean anything, because really tall people be really bad at sports. I'm really good. So first two practices are just about seeing what we got. And I was very pleased. We had a couple big hitters just crushing the ball this way and that way, and they're fielding, and they look great. And I'm thinking, oh, we might be okay. Because I was like the new coach. And anytime you're in a league, if you're the new guy, you just always assume. But first of all, let's just pause. Trisha Frank is coaching basketball. So I feel like you should be doing this. Because you're probably the new person in the room, and you're just like, my team is probably going to be terrible, and everybody knows it but me, because I'm like, oh, we might be okay. And that's kind of how I felt. Like, everybody's going, yeah, that guy's got like 8, 10-year-olds in this team. We've all got these big, you know, grown women on their team. But I'm thinking, okay, we're okay. I see him hit. They're fielding, good arms. So we go and we go to the bench and get some water. I said, okay, who can pitch? Crickets. Nobody. And I said, well, who's pitched before? And there was like two girls that were like reluctantly raising their hands, which means nobody wants to pitch. And if you know anything about baseball or softball, pitching is the core of everything. So Angie's going to give me some time-honored traditions of how to, you need to make some pitchers really quickly, Angie. Very quickly. So I don't know. We'll see. We did a little bit of pitcher and catcher work yesterday, and I'm thinking this will, you know, it's probably not as bad as I'm expecting.
I had no purpose other than I just felt
it
was
probably
worse.
Way up high, way on the ground. I mean, nobody had anything going on. And you know, the thing is, baseball and softball, the great thing about all sports is that everybody's got to have their role and do it well, right? Like, that's what's one of the great things about sports is really any kind of team sport, everybody's got to know what they do and do it well. Like, the perfect example of this is football in the role of the kicker. Like, the kickers are just the goofiest-looking guys on the sideline. Like, it's like you have a bunch of Tyuses, and then Grant is over in the corner, and like, what does that kid do? Well, he's the kicker. And if you were going to have a fight, I would take Tyus over Grant pretty much every day, right? But every team's got to have a kicking game. And you've all, everybody who watches football knows that if you don't have a good kicking game, everything else may be great, but how many teams have lost a game, even though they're probably the better team? Because they have one person on their team that didn't fulfill their role, didn't know their job. You had one job, as so often it is said, right? And in a lot of ways, that's the perfect backdrop for this picture, right? That's been on stage all year. This picture of our church. Like, this is our church. This is us. And just like a sports team, the church has got a bunch of people that have to know their role. We are not this building. We are not 6256 South Old State Road. This is us. This is the church. It's all the people that are on this picture. And just like a sports team, we all have to find our role and know what God has in store for us, what our role is as part of this church. And we're going to talk about that this morning. We've been kind of leading up to this in the last couple of weeks. And last week, we kind of really found how it worked in the Old Testament. It was different than it is in the church. Under the old law, all the Levites, last week we talked about the Levites. And remember, all the Levites, when you were born into the tribe of the Levites, then you knew you were going to work within the temple. That was the priestly tribe. And so if you were a man and your dad was a priest, you're probably going to be a priest. But that wasn't the only job in the temple. We found out last week that Asaph was a singer and a musician, and he had a role within the temple. And then there were other guys, and I don't know, but my vision is they looked more like Titus, but these were the guys that carried around the Ark of the Covenant. That was their job. They hiked it up on the poles, and they carried it around. And I'm guessing that guys like Titus, a lot of them, they weren't good singers. I'm not saying if you're a good singer or not. I don't really know. And I'm not saying guys that look like you can't be a singer, but I'm just saying, in the role of the Old Testament, they had different roles. And remember what we learned about Asaph was that they practiced, and they were the best singers they could be. They were singled out. They found the ones who were gifted that way, and musicians. And the presupposition was they were going to do this to the best of their ability. And the ones who moved the Ark of the Covenant around, they did it to the best of their ability. And they were careful, and they did it just as it was prescribed. And then you had like a setup crew that would set the tabernacle up. And then you had a cleanup crew that would take it all down. And everybody had a specific role that they were to find. And when you get to the New Testament and the way that the church worked, it seems a little less straightforward. In the church, it's almost like it was all hands on deck. Like everybody was expected to do something, and they had to kind of figure that out. The church was created to grow. The Gospel of John paints Jesus as the one who is sent. John says that all the time. He's the one that sent. Jesus would refer to himself as the one who was sent from God. And then as he talks to his disciples, he tells them that they're going to be sent into the world. And that's just kind of been the label of the church all along, that we're to go into the world, grow and expand, and necessarily find our roles and opportunities. As it grew and as it evolved, every new convert was put to work. It's not like the early church was this spectator place where all these people gathered to watch the church work. Hey, look at this cool place, and all these people get. No, it was a participatory aspect. Everybody came and said, hey, we want to be part of this. What's our role for this? It was this living and evolving organism. What truly set the church apart was that they incorporated everybody into one. And it didn't matter how smart you were or how much money you had or whether you were a man or a woman or what your ethnicity was. He took everybody and put them to work in the early church. And it's probably not nearly as shocking to us as it was to those who were watching the early church form. It seems like it was difficult for people who weren't Christians to watch this early Christian group evolve and understand that it was a place where rich and poor were both allowed to be there. A lot of the early critiques of the Christian church was that, oh, that's just a movement of the poor people, the downtrodden. That maybe Jesus had come along and they had found their Messiah, their cause that kind of united them. So that's understandable, but it wasn't a place of anybody of prestige or honor or anybody of any wealth or significance. And of course, that's just not true. It was that place. It was a place for everybody. It was a place for the low class, but it was also a place for the high class. The most persistent problem in the New Testament is probably the way that the rich and poor Christians dealt with each other, because they were so different and they came together and they're trying to live together and do life together, and it was kind of difficult because they were used to different things. They had different traditions. They had different experiences in life. And this morning, as we kind of open our Bibles into one of the more interesting early converts to Christianity, we find out that rather than separate everybody into their distinct comfort zones, like, oh, you came from this background, we'll put you over there, you'll go over here, that the early church was this place that everybody came together and kind of figured this out. They had a place to serve. They had a job to do. Today we learn about a woman named Lydia. Her story is actually pretty small. Anytime you think of some of the prominent or important women that are in the New Testament, Lydia's name comes up often. And so it's a little surprising that there's not much more of her story known. But what we are told about her is especially significant. We pick up her story in Acts chapter 16, beginning in verse 11. We We boarded a boat at Troas and sailed straight across to the island of Samothrace. The next day we landed at Neapolis. From there we reached Philippi, a major city of that district of Macedonia and a Roman colony, and there we stayed for several days. On the Sabbath day, we went a little way outside of the city to a riverbank, where we thought people would be meeting for prayer. And we sat down to speak with some women. One of them was Lydia of Thyatira, a merchant of expensive purple cloth who worshipped God. As she listened to us, the Lord opened her heart and she accepted what Paul was saying. She and her household were baptized and she asked us to be her guests. "If you agree that I am a true believer in the Lord," she said, "come and stay at my home." And she urged us until we agreed. Now, there's several things about Lydia that stand out. That's all we really know about her. Like, for all the prominence and all, and probably all of you are thinking, "Oh, Lydia, I know, you know what an important key leader in the early church." And she was, but this is really all that we know about her. She was by the riverbank. She was already a God-fearing Gentile, is kind of how they are described often in the New Testament. She was seeking God, and she comes across these apostles that tell her about Jesus. And there's a couple things that are significant about her. I feel a sneeze brewing, and I'm hoping it will subdue, but it may come out all at once, just to give you a heads up. Like, my nose is like a cartoon here. There's a couple things about Lydia that are significant. First of all, the most obvious thing about her is that she is a woman. Shocker, right? It almost doesn't need to be said, but actually, it kind of does need to be said, because if you look at the board, as we've been going through this series of different personalities in Scripture, how many women have we covered in the first month, the first 4 months of the year? Hannah, Tamar, and Saul. There are lots of prominent women in the Bible. Not as many as men, but there are several. So beginning today and throughout the whole month of May, it's not May yet, but it will be next Sunday, we're going to be talking about some of the prominent women that played significant roles in the story of Scripture. Lydia is certainly one of them. And again, it's easy for us to acknowledge, oh yeah, this was a big deal, but it's just difficult for us to really come to terms with how big a deal this was. I mean, the text is pretty matter of fact. We sat down to speak with some of the women who had gathered there. But even that was not something that was expected. We often draw this out in John chapter 4 when Jesus meets with the woman at the well. Talk about how unusual that was for them to have this conversation. Women just didn't have that kind of status in their community. They would often just be kind of left to their own devices. But here Paul seeks her out. And so the fact that she's a woman is significant, as is the fact that she kind of finds this unique role that she is a woman of means. She had her own business. Had to be extremely unique. Not only was it her own business, but she dealt in purple cloth. It was an expensive cloth, which was not something that just anybody could afford. And so she was used to dealing with the one percenters. So she was not a man. She was not of this poor society. And that's kind of a lot of what the outsiders have drawn Christianity or kind of pigeonholed it as. That's what that religion is about. But Lydia doesn't follow any of those stereotypes. Galatians 3:28, Paul says that there's no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male or female. You are all one in Christ Jesus. And perhaps nobody embodies that reality more than Lydia. She was used to dealing with wealthy folks. She was a woman of means. She apparently was kind of the head of her household. And so it's difficult to imagine the kinds of things that she had to deal with in her life. As kind of an outsider in a male-dominated society, one that certainly she was often the only woman in the room when it came to her business. And yet she has a longing and a heart for God. Saw that by the fact that they were out together praying. Paul comes along and they explain the gospel to her. And what we want to focus on this morning is her reaction. It says that Luke tells us that God opened her heart to the message. And I felt like we should stop here for just a minute, because a lot of times we focus on, especially smaller churches, what do we do to reach people? How do we share the gospel with people? How do we get frustrated when people in our family or friends, we feel like we're constantly trying to nudge them on, and we're trying to get them to see the good news? what this story reminds us of is it's really not our job to convince them. It's not our job to get them sold. It's not like Paul gives them this grand pep talk and says, have I got a deal for you? Instead, he just tells them the story. He just shares the gospel with this woman. It was God who opened her heart. It sounds awfully familiar to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3. If you remember that passage, that I planted, Apollos watered, but it was God who gave the growth. Paul over and over again says, look, I didn't do anything to bait and switch anybody. I just shared the story of Jesus and stood back and let God take care of that. Our job is to share the story of Jesus and the love of Jesus with you. Let us never wander too far away from that. Let us never forget that that's our primary goal, that God will take care of the growth. Kind of a sidebar to the story. But what's notable for our purposes here is that Lydia's reaction when she accepts Jesus immediately is, how can I serve the church? What do I have that the church can use? And so immediately she says, you need to stay with me. I've got a house. You're traveling on these missionary journeys. Come and stay with me. And she insisted to the point where they couldn't say no. It's a message that I hope weighs on our hearts this morning as we look ahead to the coming weeks and months here at our church. What is our role in the church? Like, that was Lydia's first reaction. She gives her life to Christ. She sees the good news. She embraces it, and then she says, now, what can I do to help the message of the church? What can I do to make the church better and stronger and get the word out there? I don't know how often we take a personal assessment of kind of what our role is here at Allen 3, what our jobs and tasks are, but that's kind of what Lydia does. She forces us to look ourselves in the mirror and say, what am I doing with what God has given me? Her did a great job this morning from a financial perspective. Talk about the blessings that God gives us, the responsibilities that we have, to turn those over and let God use and work that way. And of course, this isn't limited to a financial means. Lydia didn't write a check. Probably didn't have checks back in the day, but she didn't give them over her gold. She said, I've got a house, I've got a family, why don't you come stay with us? Let's brainstorm. We can kind of be a place of healing for you. Right after the story, right after Lydia's conversion, Paul and Silas are put in jail. When they're finally released, guess where they end up? They end up back at Lydia's house. A place that mattered to them. It was a meeting. And we're remiss if we don't acknowledge the fact that Lydia was ministering to them. Lydia was taking care of them. I mean, imagine spending that time in prison, getting caught up in the politics of the region. If you remember the story, they found out that Paul was a Roman citizen, and they freaked out, and they kind of kicked him out. And so there was all kinds of drama and stress on their shoulders. And Lydia said, stay with me. I will take what I have, the abilities and things that I've been gifted with, and serve you. It's a message that Paul uses throughout his writings, that everybody has been given gifts and abilities for the benefit of the body. In Romans 6, chapter 6, Paul writes, in his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. Your teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift of showing kindness to others, do it gladly. So I ask all of you this morning, what has God gifted you with to bless this church and ultimately bless the kingdom? Serving others? Teaching, encouraging, leadership, showing kindness. There are others. If you're compelled by any of these areas, then there are plenty of opportunities for you to serve this church. There are plenty of opportunities for you to partner with this church, to be our team. My softball team needs a pitcher so badly. Our church needs servers and leaders and teachers and those who show kindness. What has God given you to do? have so many opportunities to connect you to your gifts. Lydia is someone that everybody in this room should be able to relate to. She's somebody who has a good deal of resources. She's somebody who loves God. She's somebody who is excited about her faith. And she wants to connect that ministry with the church. We have all kinds of opportunities around the corner, as we talked about in our announcement time. Sometimes I feel like we disconnect that from our teaching time. Hey, we have these announcements. Hey, let's talk about Jesus. And we forget that they're connected. Like, the things that we do, the activities that we do, are our ministry. It's how we're trying to do the things that the Word has expounded upon us. And so over the next 4 weeks in May, we have the opportunity to minister and be encouraging to the widows and widowers at Willowbrook. And we can take an hour or 2 hours of our time and just share encouragement. It's a spiritual gift that comes right out of the Bible. Maybe that's not your thing. We have opportunities. Look around, if you listen carefully, there are children all around us. They need to be taught about Jesus. Maybe God has pricked your hearts to teach them. We need teachers. We have Vacation Bible School around the corner. What a great opportunity to serve in different capacities. If your gift is giving, next Saturday, come and give fully. Not everybody is gifted in that way. If it's leadership, help us to organize things in the church. There's a role for all of us. And just like successful sports teams are at their best when everybody's pitching in and everybody knows their role, churches flourish when everybody says, I know my role. I got a million things going on, but one of my roles is my church. And this is how I serve my church. When we walk out of here this morning, I hope that all of you can tell yourself, this is how I serve our church. This is how I serve the people. The gospel was never meant to be a vigilante Christian. Right? Everybody just kind of gets the gospel and goes and does their own thing. They're all connected to the church. That's why Lydia is such a great example. Because Lydia doesn't just get fired up and go, march on, Christian soldier, I'm going to go take on the world. Instead, she invites the church to her and says, how can we do this, guys? Paul's about to leave us. How can we use him while he's here to minister to our community? It's not that different than our situation here today. What can we do to connect your gifts and abilities? Service in the kingdom. Find something. If you don't feel fulfilled yet, if you feel like that's a disconnect for you, before you leave this morning, this week, think about it and send a note. Ask a question and say, how can I best serve this church that we can flourish? God is going to give the increase. God is the one who's going to bless. We don't have to get caught up in trying to save the world. God is going to do that, but he's going to do it to us. We're thriving, connecting our gifts and opportunities for our ability. One of the abilities that Brian Ballard has is to lead us in worship. One of the abilities that all of us have is to open our hearts in worship. And so as we end this morning, I would invite you to do that with us. Stand up with us and sing.